What is up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of Debate Night. We are back yet again, late in the season, but we've still got some more exciting disc golf as we round things out, and some great people here to talk about it. So, Brody Smith is joining us, repping the Florida Gators. Go Gators!
Yeah.
Defenders of the Swamp.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was college football started, NFL's right around the corner. Interesting times. There is a chance that Ohio State, I got to put all my eggs in Ohio State's basket because it doesn't look like Florida's going to be very good. They have the hardest schedule in the country.
Like ever. And,
yep. Does not look. There's a very high probability that we lose our last six games, which is definitely a sad way of going out. Raiders also I thought they were going to be good. We're like not even favored against the Chargers and their quarterbacks in a boot. So
you didn't go with AOC.
I hate it, but man of the people, nonetheless, still here. I gotta say, you know, normally I just look at the comments on our last video, but Silas has been popping these videos out left and right all over the place. And, man, some of these people, I think they just want to see 6 hours. I think these are the people that like watching like FPO play tic-tac-toe. I think these are the people that like watching Eagle play with his kendama. I think these are the people that like watching drone shots of absolutely nothing. These are the people that like, I was shocked to see how many PDGA stands there were defending the PDGA and defending slow play. It is kind of crazy. Again, guys, stop using the lame excuse. You don't have to be Isaac Robinson to have an opinion or to be correct about something. It's pretty obvious. It's pretty obvious. If there's going to be 50 throws, do I want to see those 50 throws in 2 hours? Or do I want to see those 50 throws across 4 hours? Just wait. Hey. Just wait until like DGN starts going crazy with commercials of where now you just are missing a bunch of coverage and you just get a bunch of commercials. See what happens there, because that will eventually happen. So I don't know. Man of the people, though. shout out to Robbie. He says, right people, wrong spot for my picks last week. But I will say, having been crushed by Isaac in events in the past, I do believe Isaac is very good at disc golf. Just had to make a pick last week. I'm going to be honest. I think very good is an understatement. I think Isaac is excellent and potentially one of the best in the world.
He's just putting it out there. Just making sure you knew. We're also joined by Scott. Scott is back for another episode.
Yeah, I'm glad to be back here for a second time. I feel like I learned some stuff my first time on and hoping to improve a little bit my second time.
All right. Love to hear it. Somebody who has been here much more than two times is Gary. Barbershop day for Gary. Let's go. Gary might be frozen.
Yeah, I might be frozen, but can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, you've got a smoldering gaze, though, right now. We might just keep you like that.
That's perfect. Nope, just here enjoying. I just got back from a little trip to Massachusetts. I'm actually going back to Massachusetts tomorrow. But I'll tell you, if you go out there, Maple Hill's not the only course to check out. We stopped by Mile Marker 63, Simon and Casey's new course.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible place.
Okay.
Do they have a clubhouse at that place yet?
No, it's kind of like they have a small area where you can go like get some waters and like, get some snacks and stuff. In fact, they're really nice. We went in to go sign in and they gave everyone in our group free waters. No clubhouse yet, but the property they have, what they did with it, with like the short grass being the fairway and like longer grass being the rough, it's beautiful.
Sounds like a great time. I can really see you're very animated about it and passionate. Feel free to refresh your webcam while Mike introduces himself.
Yeah, how's it going? I'm a little worried if all these people keep making Brody mad, we're not going to have a man of the people anymore. So that's concerning. But yeah, not much going on here. This weekend, I'm the TD for the South Dakota State Championship. So shout out that tournament.
Let's go.
You get a nice little vacation. That's nice.
Yeah. I get a golf cart, so I'm super excited. I'll be driving around taking pictures, avoiding players. So it's going to be great. But yeah, other than that, ready to go.
Yeah. Repping Airborne Disc Golf today.
Yeah. Shout out Airborne.
Loving the orange. Gary disappeared off the face of the planet. So we may have to wait a second for him to join back in. All right. So we're going to get into our first topic now that we've got Gary unfrozen and ready to rock and roll. So this is one that I thought of the other day. I'm very interested to get everybody's opinion on. So it seems like everyone is upset that the Champions Cup is not at a wooded course next year. That seems to be a pretty consensus opinion after it had seemingly attached itself to that theme in these past few years. So after attending Worlds and seeing firsthand the shortcomings that a wooded venue brings to the table, should we be rooting for a wooded major at all? Would we then just then be handcuffing the event to never evolve past a certain point as a spectator experience and revenue generator in the future? How do you weigh the pros and cons? I just kind of had this thought the other day as I, you know, now that I've experienced a wooded venue at a, you know, high attendance event and all of the shortcomings that had, I was just kind of thinking to myself, you know, is it fair to even want a wooded major in the first place? Brody, what do you think?
Yeah, there's a tough question because, you know, you have all the OGs that have been playing disc golf for a while. Like this is where disc golf was created to play with trees around. It was created to play in the woods. That was kind of the intention. And that's where a lot of people believe disc golf needs to go. Now, I would agree with them that there's a lot of courses here in the Dallas area that are open that aren't really that fun. They're not very creative courses. And the woods courses are a lot more enjoyable to play. The issue is like what you're just saying is like there are a lot of shortcomings, the biggest one being coverage. Like just there are certain wooded courses that it's very, very difficult to get full coverage of every single hole. And having some blind holes, that's, you know, that's just not going to cut it. So I don't know. It's one of those that I'm very interested to see 20, 30 years from now, what direction disc golf decides to go. Because on one hand, watching disc golf in the woods is very enjoyable. You have to see a lot of different shots. You got to see people scramble. And then on the other hand, it's like not a lot of people can see it in person. And then also certain wooded courses, like coverage is really bad. You get a lot of blind shots. You don't really have any sort of idea. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes.
Okay, Scott, what is your opinion? How do you think the pros and cons weigh out?
I definitely agree with Brody that there is a lot of fun to be had on a wooded course versus a wide open course like some of the ones we have here in Dallas. I also think it's fair to mention, I don't think this was the PDGA's number one choice. You know, there is that pine beetle infestation where W.R. Jackson was. They're clearing out a lot of trees and that course is going to have to go under a major redesign. I think that if we still had that course available to us right now, that they would be having it at W.R. Jackson. Personally, I love Swenson Park, you know, the location of the OTB Open, and I am happy to see an extra round of coverage there. I think it's a great course, and I think it's one of the best ones we play on tour for how we see it through coverage. There's other courses that I do not think film as well. And I also think one thing that we cannot have happen at PDGA majors is what we saw at Worlds with cellular issues and live stream issues at a wooded course. If that means we have to move to, you know, more open courses that can have more viewers in a place with better cell phone reception, then I'm all for it.
Okay, so definitely some concerns be raised. Gary, how would you address these? What would you think makes sense?
Yeah, I think the first thing to realize is that we can do two different things at once. The question kind of creates that dichotomy of it's either one or the other. You know, you can either have a wooded major or you can evolve and make improvements. And I think we can do both those things because every venue offers some degree of challenge. Wooded courses just happen to be a little bit harder to film and they aren't always the best for spectators. But look at the most recent World Championship. You know, you had one course that was wooded and one that wasn't wooded. And which of those courses was more heavily praised by the pros? Which of those courses received less negative feedback? It was the wooded course because the pros loved it. And, you know, because open courses bring their own problems. Time and money is being invested to figure this out. The Pro Tour has said that prices are of wooded venues are being adjusted to reflect that. They're working on improving the overall quality for live coverage. And that the tour just needs to continue to adapt and learn from these scenarios. Don't wait till the last minute to check venues. But wooded disc golf kind of invokes the spirit of the game that we all love. You know, you can't cut off your left arm just because it functions differently. You know, this, I think you can painfully see the roots of golf in this kind of discussion because we take that same mentality of like the Masters are always at Augusta and PGA Championship is Parkland courses, US Open plays the tight, tough courses, and the Open Championship does the links style. But, you know, I'll be the first to say that I want a wooded major. I definitely do. This stuff has to be planned ahead. They have to work and think strategically. Form a major committee if one isn't all there already, and have someone on that committee's job be course viability. Have them start testing this stuff in advance. And if these are supposed to be the biggest events in our sport, we have to start treating them that way.
Okay, so Gary's still seeing some light at the end of the tunnel for these type of events. Mike, what are your opinion?
Yeah, so in all these individual sports, whether it be golf or tennis, every major has a theme that the fans know they love. They can attribute to that major, and really our majors kind of lack that. I mean, USDGC has the kind of Masters feel of one course, lots of history. Other than that, I mean, I guess the European Open's in Europe, like that's consistent, but what are our majors really known for? And wooded disc golf has been a part of our sport since the very beginning, and it's slowly going away in the majority of the case for good reason. But I do think it's essential that we keep it alive in some form for the history. I mean, when you look at tennis back hundreds of years ago, grass was the most popular court, and now it's almost non-existent. Other than a couple events, and one of them being Wimbledon, one of the majors. Wimbledon will never change off of grass, even though it's older, harder to maintain, and the play is a little bit different. And it's the biggest feature of that major, and that's why people are excited about it. I think we can acknowledge that wooded courses may not make the most sense for the majority of the tour, but I think sacrificing some revenue, some spectator ability for one major that keeps a very important part of our game alive seems worth it to me. And like Gary said, I mean, a little bit, maybe too much faith in the PDGA, but if these things were planned a little bit more ahead, or we put more investment or slightly more time into figuring out some ways around some of these challenges, I do think it'd be possible. And from the fan perspective and from the player perspective, I think wooded majors still are important.
Yeah, I think that's sound reasoning. The reason I kind of wrote this down is because, and you know, the broadcasting is one thing for sure, but being on the course at a high attendance, you know, in the realm of disc golf event on the woods, I saw limitations that you don't see watching on DGN. And I thought to myself, you know, because most of the wooded courses are just not going to have the same kind of parking situation. And most importantly, just spectating logistically, they just don't function correctly to where, I mean, spectating on Friday, especially at Worlds was near impossible to really get good views. You had to really struggle for it. And I just thought to myself, cause I agree. I think wooded disc golf is not something that I want to just eradicate on merit. It's just this idea that we are basically going to take one event, and unless there is some very, very serious planning or almost customization in wooded venue to like make it function differently, you're basically saying this event can never have more than 500 spectators ever. Like that's just kind of how it felt to me. And New London is not even the tightest wooded course out there. Like it's got some open hallways. I thought that was interesting how before I had gone to that event, I had always been quick to jump on it. And then I kind of thought to myself, well, you know, as a major committee or somebody who's trying to make a successful in-person event, by going to the woods, you immediately say, this event will fail at X amount of spectators. It's going to be almost impossible to do. So I'd be curious to see what kind of creative solutions they could come up with to counter that. What a disc golf. It's continually been the kind of the hot topic, and we'll continue to kind of see how they decide to combat that for sure. So next topic here, as we are approaching the end of the season, we are getting very close to the playoffs now. We have just one event, playoffs being D-Glow. So as we get close to this kind of cut here, and it's getting harder and harder to make the postseason and especially the playoff or the tour finale, my question here is, who's one player you are shocked is so low in the Pro Tour standings, being low as in bad position. And one player you are shocked is so high in the standings based on how you've perceived their season for afar. Somebody that you look at, you think they've had a decent season, and oh, wow, maybe not so much on points and vice versa. Scott, who do you have?
So for my pick for being low, I am going with Corey Ellis at 54th. And I wasn't just looking at this season, but I was also looking at his performance the last couple of years. In 2022, Corey had a second at MVP Open, a second at Great Lakes, and a fourth at Champions Cup. Last year in 2023, he had a third at Portland Open, and he won the European Open. You know, he got a major win. At the beginning of the season, I don't know if you guys watched this, there was kind of a mini New Zealand tour down under. Corey Ellis was playing really good. He won two of those events. The third one he played in, he ended up DNFing, supported like a young up-and-comer. But from what I've seen the last couple of years, and then with the start of his season in New Zealand, I thought we were going to see Corey Ellis just start sweeping events. For a player that I'm shocked is so high, I only say this because I feel like there is so much talk about how he fell off, how he's not doing so great, how he's not the same, but that's Paul McBeth. Paul McBeth is ninth in tour point standings right now, and I feel like he does not get credit for that. The only players above him are Gannon, Calvin, Ricky, the Robinson brothers, and Kyle Klein, who are all, you know, leading this. Oh, and AB, but they're all leading the sport right now, and we're not giving Paul enough respect.
Yeah, valid picks for sure there, Scott. Gary, who is surprising you in the Pro Tour standings?
Yeah, so seeing Kristen at fifth is a bit surprising given her dominance last year. I think another big shocker for me is looking at Sayananda dropping off from 22nd last year to 46. I would have thought with her win that we were going to see some more elevated play from her. The person who kind of took that spot for me, though, is Rebecca Cox, because she was at 29th last year and she's at 10th. So this could be a resurgence year for her. Looking over at the MPO side, there's a lot of shockers over there. Joey Buckets, up 50 spots from 61st to 11th with the Pro Tour win under his belt now. And I think we can all agree that when he brings it all together, he can win any weekend against pretty much anybody. It's not a shock to see people like Nicklaus up 23 spots or Gavin Rathbun up 46 spots or even Casey White, who's up 29 spots, because they're evolving with the game and they're getting better. And but there's big shockers on the negative side. I'm not going to count Eagle because of the injuries, and KJ and Conrad, the people who are not adapting and evolving with the game, I feel like. But there are four big names that stick out to me. The first is Nicolò Castro, down 54 spots. He finished 17th at chess.com, and it's been downhill ever since then. He's not having a good season. He's in the 80s right now. Next is Chandler Kramer, down 39 spots. I feel like he's only succeeded at A tiers this year, and that stuff doesn't matter for the Pro Tour. Alden Harris is another one. He's down 35 spots this year from 13th last year. His best finish is 19th, and I think maybe he's having a rough time with the brand change. And last but not least, Drew Gibson, down 27 spots to 94th. I thought coming back from the injury, he was primed for a good year this year, but we just haven't seen it. And I'm going to throw out a couple dishonorable mentions to Chris Clemens and Corey Ellis, like Scott said.
Gary coming for everybody. The question did say, who is one player you are shocked and one player, but I mean, that was like eight. So
it's good strategy. Only one.
I mean, that's one way to look at things, but I feel like I have to dock you a little bit for that, but definitely a lot more shockers on the negative side. I completely agree with that. Mike, who surprised and stood out to you?
Yeah, I wish I would have went before Gary because he sniped all 46 people I had written down, but that's cool. So for people that did better than expected, this is kind of a hard question for me to answer because I do feel like I'm kind of on the higher percentile of paying attention throughout the whole year. I'm watching the tour from week to week, so nothing like crazy surprised me. The Joseph Anderson going up 50 spots, a little deceiving. He only played like five or six events last year on the tour. I think honestly, for like the casual, semi-casual person that is paying attention, I think the fact that Chris Dickerson is in 10th is pretty surprising. That's five better than last year. I went back and looked at Jomez. He was only on Jomez coverage this year at three events the whole year. So he wasn't really on coverage, but he always did well. You know, he had nine top tens, two podiums, only missed cash once. And if you look at the standings, he hasn't played an event or one or two events of the last like six. Like, he's just non-existent on the tour. So the fact that he's in 10th is pretty surprising to me. As far as the lower, I mean, some, a lot of them have been named. The fact that Nico's down so far is pretty crazy. He is kind of falling off as far as his prime and stuff. But for me, I think the most surprising would be Chris Clemens. He's going to miss the playoffs, or the tour championship rather, down 30 spots. His average finish last year, 28th place, average this year, 41st. Someone who we knew never really was going to win an event, but always very consistent. Always, you knew if you saw 1, 2, 3 pages of the leaderboard, you'd always see his name. The fact that he dropped down so much this year is pretty surprising to me.
Yeah, I think whenever you have a guy like Clemens showing that, because he was a guy that seemingly had disc golf kind of figured out to the point where he felt like he was always going to do all right out there. When he's slipping, I think that really points to the strength of the field really increasing. Brody, who are your picks?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, how do I go back to see what they were in 2023? Is there not a way of doing that easily on the website?
Yes.
Like, I'm on Andrew Art. Well, Andrew Marweed, spoiler, it's going to be my surprising one. I'm on his thing, and I wanted to, like, it says event history. I click on it. My only options are 2024 DGPT and 2024 DGPT Europe. It would be really nice for me to select 2023 there. But I'm going to go with Marweed just because I feel like in the past, we know that he's obviously a great putter, but he's always struggled, or at least we've always thought he's kind of struggled on those open courses. And we kind of just wait for him to show up at Idlewild, wait for him to show up at Waco. But looking at a season, he's actually been very consistent at a lot of events, and ones that you wouldn't really expect to for him to like do well at, right? You know, DDO, he got 16th. You know, that is a predominantly open, long course. So he's having himself a decent season here. He's in 21st place, which is really, really well. All the names pretty much have already been mentioned. Nico, obviously. Chris Clemens, I think a lot of people had big, high hopes for him, especially coming into Discraft this year. Alden Harris is a weird one. Very quiet as to like what is happening over there. But the one that no one said, Silas Schultz. If you remember last year, Silas Schultz showed signs at multiple tournaments of like high level play. And he's kind of sitting like towards the middle of the pack, or like even towards the bottom, and hasn't really popped off at all this year. A little bit of a surprise for me.
I think Alden is surprising because he was a consistent player last year, and that's kind of what, like, he I don't think he missed cash once. Like, that was kind of his MO. Silas Schultz, I think, was a guy who just didn't get hot this year like he did last year, where he couldn't get those couple big finishes that really jump you up the point standings. But I think what we're seeing now is, like, if you just can't, like, if you mess up a little bit, you fall a ton in those standings. Mm-hmm. Like, and if you're just off your game a little bit, you just start plummeting down the standing. It is definitely getting harder and harder to make that tour championship, and that huge bonus is going to feel more and more earned the further we get into this, for sure. It'd be interesting to see how things pan out right on the bubble there. Go ahead.
Sorry, one really quick thing. I didn't bring this up in mind because it wasn't part of the question, but in looking at all the stuff from last year and this year, there was a 50% increase in international players on both the top 100 in MPO and top 50 in FPO. So a lot of new European names coming into this.
A lot of new European events as well there.
Yeah, but this is just the not the European points involved. This is just the...
So. Yeah. I mean, there is still some extra full pro tours, but I'll be curious to see, as they get over to more events and as those fields combine more, you just get better and better gauges of kind of the strength of those players for sure.
Those points are really significant too, because Paul was mentioned and I looked, and basically half of Paul's pro tour points are from just Europe.
So. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He harvested points over there in Europe. So speaking of other things that are up for grabs right now, so we have just one MPO major left for grabs, being the USDGC. So I want to know, who needs it most to change the narrative of their season, whether that narrative is to win player of the year, break a slump, or just give a bad season a pleasant note to finish on? Which player is it very important for them to change the narrative of their season? The most important, Gary, what do you think?
Sorry, Mike, I'm going to do it to you again. There's a lot of good answers here. The obvious one, Paul McBeth, you know, trying to improve his major count. Since his first major win, he's never gone more than 2 years in a row without one. That's a big thing for him. AB is another great choice because if he wants any chance of winning player of the year this year, he's going to need to win that USDGC. But I don't even know if that's going to be enough because of Gannon's average finishes and Gannon's wins, which Gannon's also another good candidate for this because that would cement, I think, 2024 is one of the best years we've ever seen from a player and would definitely lock down the player of the year argument. And then you've got Ricky. So the drought's getting bigger. We're almost 7 years now, and I think his relevance in the annals of history are being tested here, and a win would more legitimize and reignite his legacy. But speaking of legacy, the correct answer for this is Calvin Heimberg, because every single year the competition gets better, majors are getting harder to win, and he has two wins this season, but the history books care a whole lot more about majors. Sure, Dan Marino is the best QB to never win a Super Bowl. But what competitor wants that distinction? Not Calvin. His last three events being third, second, and fourth, I think he's priming up for a really good USDGC, and this could be the year. But my hot take, I think, is going to be, and I've felt this way since the beginning of the year, I don't think any of the people I just mentioned are going to win USDGC. I think we're going to have a first-time winner, and I'm 100% here for it.
All right. Some early predictions from Gary. Certainly a tournament that, you know, as much as momentum kind of goes in there, it can be unpredictable. Mike, what do you think? Who needs this to change their narrative, and what narrative would that be?
All right, I'm only mentioning one name. It was one he mentioned, but not for very long, so I'm pretty grateful. And that's Paul that's Paul McBeth. And I'll even be kind to him. I'll change this question a little bit. He needs to get any win before the end of the season to save his narrative. Okay. Paul's about to have his first zero win season since 2010. He's been given a ton of excuses over the last couple of years, and rightly so for some of them. I mean, family, having kid, having injuries. But I mean, I'm kind of running out of patience on those. At some point, they're not short-term excuses and just kind of like the reality of the situation. At this point, if you would have asked me 2-3 years ago if he was going to break Ken's record, it would have been absolutely for sure. And as we go further and further, it's looking worse and worse. You know, I was thinking about this question and I kind of had to laugh because Hunter and Trevor used to always love saying this. Paul never gets second. Either wins or he tries so hard to win that he falls a few spots. It's that killer instinct that he always had. But 3 seconds this year, a third this year, only being in the mix for one major so far this year, I can't help but wonder if the intensity is still there for him. So for me, major, that'd be great. But how about just any win for Paul to get him off this schneid and go first time in 14 years without a win?
Yeah. That is a big deal. I didn't even think about that, but that it would be a huge milestone coming up for sure. Brody, who do you think needs that USDGC title?
Well, I mean, I think what you said with Paul is a good one, because I think if he does win it, that does a whole lot. But I'm reading the question, and are we basing it off of like what people are thinking right now?
Yeah, like whatever their narrative would be. So yeah, the narrative being created by
the fans. Who needs it to change the most to change the narrative of their season? Like, I don't really, and maybe I'm wrong, I don't really see tons of people being like, when is Paul going to win? When is Paul going to win? Like, there's not a lot of people being like, I can't believe Paul is not winning. I don't see that nearly as much as I did a couple years ago, because I think it's happened so many years now that we just all understand like, oh, it's actually harder to win now than it used to be. I think the narrative to me, one that has kind of gone quiet a little bit, but would definitely raise right back up, is if AB's in contention. He hasn't put himself in contention in many majors. He should have won the European Open last year, threw that one away. So I think if he puts himself in contention at this major, I think everyone's narrative will be, can he finally win a big one when he's in contention?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely one thing to not play well at majors. It's another to get yourself into the mix and then kind of throw them away. Scott, wrap it up for us. Who do you think needs this win to really flip the narrative of their season?
I'll start out by saying I was talking to my girlfriend about being on tonight. She said, you know, who are you talking to? I said, Gary, I'm very nervous to go after him on this question. And I 100% agree with Gary's answer of Calvin Heimberg. I think that was a great pick. as well as Mike's of Paul McBeth. I want to see Paul tie Ken Climo with 18 major wins. I don't want him to lose his 14-year streak of winning tournaments. And I also want to see him be a fourth-time USDGC champion. But the pick I will make right now, because those two were taken, is Ricky Wysocki. We've seen the seven-year major slump. We've also seen him be an incredible player this year. I think he's second right now in the Pro Tour point standings. He's been playing at an extremely high level. He's been playing consistently, and he needs this major win in the new era to cement his legacy in the sport. He's one of the greatest of all time, and I think he's deserving of a win, and I'll end it with that.
Yeah, it's always trickier for Rick when he's having a really good season at the same time as having that narrative kind of chase after him, because, yeah, then it's always just like, then it really just puts the emphasis on the fact that it's the major championships that he's struggling at. But there's definitely, you know, there's definitely a lot of players vying for a win to really change things up. I would agree that all of those are valid for sure. So one final topic here before we get into our finals. I want to take a look at the Pro Tour schedule, particularly the length of the schedule, the amount of events, because it's been a long Pro Tour season packed with events. We've been going since the end of February and we'll finish in a little over a month from now in October. So do you think the Pro Tour should shorten the length of the season or amount of events, or should they stretch events year round, but just maybe make more time in between them or different breaks, or is it perfect as is? How would you tweak this if you could, and why? How would you mess around with the schedule? I know we'll throw out different opinions on it, because right now it is a pretty long schedule full of a lot of events. So, Mike, what do you think? What would you do?
I actually think the schedule is, well, the amount of events and time frame is good. Schedule is a whole different story, but the PGA Tour golf 20 to 30 events is about how many of these players are playing, and it's about the same time frame. Actually, they start a little earlier, they end earlier. Now, I don't want to just say, oh, 20 or 30, let's do what they do. They obviously have better access to travel. They're almost all flying. I'm sure they all are flying. They have better access to recovery. So I don't want to say, like, it's the exact same, but around that 20 mark is probably fine. And that's about what these players are playing. They're all playing around 17 to 23 events. If players are strategic, they can take breaks throughout the year. You only use 12 regular season events. I mean, Gannon already has six events this year that don't count. He has six events that aren't going to count on his points. No one's forcing these players to play every single event. If you're a top player, you can strategically take breaks. You can, you know, not take the Europe trip. You can take two events off in a row, and you're still going to be about where you were as long as you play well. Now, if you're a fringe player trying to make the playoff or the tour championship, then you're incentivized to grind extra events, and that's how it should be. When you look at people grinding on the Pro Tour, trying to get in the FedEx Cup, those are the guys playing the most events. And part of it is a strain on their body, but they just need to get better if they want to play less events. It's just kind of the reality of the situation. So I will end this by saying one thing that would help a lot is a more intuitive and smarter schedule as far as where it's going, when Europe happens and things like that. But as far as the length and the amount of time, these players don't have to play all these events. So I think the schedule's fine as is.
Yeah, good point. And, you know, like you mentioned, there is that, you know, there's that part of the Pro Tour format now that allows for events to be dropped, and that certainly does help. Brody, how would you change up the schedule if you could, or if at all?
Yeah, I think I'm going to agree here. I don't think I would actually change the schedule in the sense of like less events, more events. I would change up the schedule and like where we started in the country and where we went after that. You know, also maybe not having back-to-back majors, also probably a good idea for next year. So that's what I would change up. And, you know, I think Mike was right too. Right now we're in this weird realm where there are a lot of people that are getting money that they didn't have, and they're trying to kind of figure out what to do with it. And, you know, there's still a lot of people that like don't have a house. Like, they're making a lot of money and they do not have a house. So it's like, what are you going to tell that person? Like, don't go to the next tournament. They're going to be like, well, what am I supposed to do? I think if you asked a lot of pros, like, what would you do if I gave you $50,000 right now not to go to the next tournament? A lot of them would be like, I'd probably just still play, right? So we're starting to slowly see a shift. You know, we see it with Simon. We see it with Paul. We see it with Ricky this year. Ricky, I think this is the first year, maybe last year a little bit, that Ricky started like picking and choosing tournaments. I think the big shift that we need to see really is obviously the Disc Golf Pro Tour. It's their job to kind of like hype up every event, but it's okay for every event not to be the biggest event ever. And every event to be like, this is the one you have to tune in and watch. Like, I think it's okay for us to have some events where, let's say Idlewild next year, let's say like, you know, only 10 of the top 25 people go to Idlewild. It's probably not going to be a massive event, but it's still a really fun course to watch. And I think that's still fine.
Be a bummer for Idlewild though. Hey, Dave.
You can't have massive events week after week. It just won't exist.
Yeah. No, it is a lot of, I think a lot of times the PGA Tour seems like they kind of gather up momentum and then they have those kind of big events where they get everybody, whether it be the Wells Fargo or however they pick and choose.
You know what events are big and what events aren't big on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. You see commercials. That's how you know. Scott, what do you think about the PGA schedule or the Pro Tour schedule, I should say? Do you think it's fine as is, or would you kind of change things up?
Right now, I think that the length of the season is fine. We have a few months off for players to go home if they're traveling in a van year round. What I would like to see a change with is how the European leg of the DGPT is handled. I don't think we should be in the situation where we have U.S. and European events on alternating weekends, or I believe there is one in the same weekend this year. I don't think the sport is big enough to support that. And I think we could see much higher quality with stronger strength of field events in Europe if we could make that just a single stretch of the tour with no U.S. events going on. And Brody mentioned Ricky, Simon, and Paul with the way that they're able to, you know, fly into events and pick which ones they're playing. But I think those are very isolated examples for, you know, the bottom 100 players in the field. I feel like we know how big those three players' contracts are, and it's giving them a lot of options and choices that just aren't available to the person who is hoping to make cash next week, like it's their first year on the Pro Tour and they're just grinding by day. So I think the length is good, but I just want to change in Europe.
Okay. So everybody
rebuttal. Go ahead. That's our first like disagreement. Wait, what was the statement at the end about the players at the bottom? Why does that matter at all that they're not able to fly into tournaments and pick and choose tournaments?
Well, I may have misunderstood you, but I think you were saying that's the change we're seeing in disc golf, but I do not think that's the change we're seeing for the whole field. I think that's for,
yeah, no, I agree 1%. With you, but no one cares about those people.
Hit them with it.
Yeah, that's fair.
No, if Idlewild got the top 25 players in the world to show up and only 15 of the 50 to 100 players and all the other were like less outside the top 100, it would be a massive tournament. If Idlewild got everyone from 25 to 100, no one would care.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's all that's I'm saying true. Is like the top guys, eventually they're going to Gannon, AB, Calvin. Eventually these guys are going to get massive amounts of money in their bank accounts. They're going to get houses. They're going to get wives or girlfriends or whatever, and they're not going to want to grind and go to every tournament week after week after week after week. They're just not going to. That's just the nature of the beast. That's just what's going to happen. And so they're going to pick and choose. And like I was saying, we're already seeing it with the top guys. So it's just going to continue to happen.
Yeah, I think once there's access, it's definitely a natural progression. So Gary, it seems like everybody's kind of in consensus so far here. I'm a little surprised, honestly, that I thought maybe some people would be in favor of reducing events or changing the length of the season. Are you kind of in the same boat?
Yeah, I think it's really important for pros to have an off season for several reasons, you know, a chance to reset physically, mentally, and see family. And I think contracts and sponsorships being changed or negotiated makes it a lot easier when there's like a cutoff point. But yeah, I don't think I would change much about the length of the season. I think February through October makes a sense and it's appropriate. You could stretch into early November if it's absolutely necessary, but ultimately the big issue is that subscribers are going to suspend their accounts for the off season. So the DGPT has to ask themselves, like, do they have the resources and time to offer something that will fill that gap? And maybe yes, with things like the New Zealand tour, which I really loved. The DGPT Europe could maybe have some events, or there could be some A tiers in places where there's good weather, but you know, I don't know that they have the resources and time. So what they should probably just do in the off season is lock it up and use that time to plan and prepare, you know, look for, to test new sites for coverage, talk to pros and consumers and get more insight as to what they're looking for. I think some of the tweaks that I would make personally is I would spend more time figuring out the European swing. Like everyone said, if you have to extend the tour into November by a couple of weeks or two, and that grants us a week or two of flexibility for the European events, I think that was, it's worth considering. I think they could showcase the Q series a little bit better, not necessarily the events themselves, but maybe update the viewers on the battle for the tour cards. What well-known pro is on the bubble right now? I think they could look for underutilized areas of the country. You know, one of the best things about Worlds this past time is watching pros dissect new courses. There could be a small group created to go find new Worlds venues that check the boxes. And then the last thing I would do is I would eliminate the plus event designation. It's an unfair point advantage for the players who can attend all three of them.
Yeah, the plus events, I think, was an interesting experience or experiment. I'm curious to see how long they hold on to those. You know, it was definitely kind of a PGA Tour copycat move in the sense that PGA Tour is also working with, I think their idea behind their event was larger purses. We're going to get all the players to agree to come to them ahead of time, that sort of thing. Whereas the Pro Tour kind of went more in the direction of like, we're going to incentivize people with points. And there was some other bonuses here and there, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was just saying, this is the interesting thing is right now the PGA Tour is having a difficult time having their top pros show up to events.
Yeah.
Which makes events not as popular. And also, you know, if I'm a big sponsor of an event and you tell me Tiger's not showing up, Ricky Fowler's not showing up, Scotty's not showing up, you know, the big names in golf aren't showing up, I'm going to be like, well, why am I paying this amount of money? So it's interesting because the PGA Tour is pushing those Elite Plus events to try to get people to show up. Disc golf doesn't have that issue right now. And so that's where it doesn't really make sense. Like, everyone's going to show up to D-Glow this week.
Oh, and like, and also the best in the world, like Kristen Sitar being an example, has shown, like, I don't care if I miss Portland. Like, it's fine.
Like, that's also true. Yeah. Right.
So like, it clearly hasn't been enough. Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, golf will always be driven by the stars. And yeah, disc golf isn't really at that point yet where it's, you're getting large, other than during the Europe crossover, we get these weekend fields, but during the normal touring schedule, it's definitely not a factor. There's too many guys that are just on the road.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a balancing act to this, but people who are afraid of these weaker fields, everyone always asks, you know, what's the point of these majors? Like, what's the difference between a major and a regular event? And then right now, I guess that's like kind of true in disc golf. But if the fields were a bit weaker in all the other events, that would be one of the things that make a major because everyone would be there. Mm-hmm. When you look at like, when you look at the strength of schedule or field on our events from 2023, two of the four majors were like 15th or 16th in strength of field. You look at golf's strength of field and they're always like in the top six. So well, like it would be
right now, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good spin zone though. Hey, if the fields are weaker, the major fields will be more electric. It is true. And yeah, I think right now, what was our strongest field? Like Waco. It was like one, cause they got all those Texas players that fill in the back end of the field and they're all like 1,000 rated. So yeah, it is interesting, to see how that kind of evolves. All right, we're going to move on to our final topic. Mike, you have a 2-point advantage on Gary. Interesting final topic here. Curious to see how you guys go on this one. So Mike, would you like to go first or second?
I'm going to go first.
Okay. This would be electric if you guys have differing opinions. I mean, this is very much an A or B.
If I knew we had different opinions, I'd go second, but I don't think we will. So
maybe.
Gary, okay. You want to tell me what team you're doing?
Yeah, I say, do you want to tell them?
I think I'm on team Young Gun.
Okay, yeah, I'll go first.
Okay, so here's the question. So I've got two groups of players here. And Gary, since you're going second, maybe, you know, maybe now you want to try and craft an argument during Mike's for the other team, try and sway us all.
You can't change your answer when you know you're right.
Okay, fair enough. We basically have kind of the old guard, somewhat an old guard, a lot of the household names versus a kind of a mock newer guard of players. And I want to know which group of players is most likely to win more combined majors in the next 5 years. I try to pick two groups that I think you could argue for either for different reasons and are a little bit controversial. So group A, we have Ricky Wysocki, Paul McBeth, Calvin Heimberg. Group B, we have Isaac Robinson, Nicholas Antola, and Anthony Barella. So Mike, you kind of alluded to it, but why, what is your choice and why?
Yeah, I mean, I love this question, but I think you made group B just a little bit too powerful. We're going to have the same answer, so I'm going to go a bit further. Group B wins without Barella. So Ricky has zero majors in the last 5 years. Paul, he has four in the last 5 years, but since Worlds in 2022, he's only been in the top five twice. And if we all be honest with ourselves, it doesn't look like he's going to be winning many more. I mean, if you were going to do an over under on majors for Paul in the next 5 years, what would you be comfortable going over on? Like, if I gave you the line 1.5 majors, would you go over? Because I wouldn't. Calvin's average finish in non-majors is 8th. Average finish in majors is 15th. Now, Calvin's the one here that could mess this up, because tomorrow he could decide he's going to win a bunch of majors. And I will say that that makes it a bit closer. But if I'm going to try to guess here, I'll give Ricky one, I guess. That'll be better than the last 5 years, right? I'll give Paul one just because it feels wrong to say Paul will never win another major. And I'm going to be super generous. So I'm going to give Calvin two. All right. So that's 4 for them.
That's a lot.
Isaac's had 3 in the last 2 years, and it's not like he's all or nothing. He has a 4th, a 3rd, a 6th during that time frame. The fact that in the last 8 majors, he has 3 wins, a 4th, a 3rd, and a 6th is ridiculous. He's only 22. The next 5 years should be the peak of his prime, you would think. And in an interview after he won, he made it clear he's putting much more emphasis and focus on in the intensity he's giving for these. He made a comment that he can't give this much attention to detail on every shot, every single event, but he's going to do it in majors. So he's going to win some more. Antola, 23 years old. He's gotten 2nd in half of his last 8 majors. He's going to win some majors. Barella is a wild card. Like maybe he'll win one. I don't really care if he does. He doesn't have the best performance in majors, but we'll give him one, I guess. So I'm giving Isaac 4, and that's half the rate of winning that he's had in the last 2 years. So even if you think, well, that's still too fast, we can give him 3, I guess. Antola, half of his majors, he's been getting 2nd. He's going to get surely at least 2 in the next 5 years. And we'll give Barella half a major. So that's 6.5 to 4. And I don't even think the other group's getting 4. So it's for sure Team B. And if you say anything else, you're, I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, very, very strong on a Team B. Gary, you kind of seem like you're on the same side. Maybe you've got something else to bring to the table, though.
Yeah, we have the same final answer. A few different points getting there to that final answer, though. This is a fun thought experiment. I noticed that Gannon didn't make either group, because that would have tipped the scale immediately in one direction, I think. But I guess let's look at them, because you got Paul McBeth pushing 2 years since his last major win. His putting doesn't seem to be where it once was. His game feels a bit off. And I know this is going to get me some hate in the comments. I think McBeth is done with major wins. I think The field's getting too strong. I don't think he's going to win another one. Unfortunately, I'd love to see him prove me wrong. For Ricky, I think Ricky wants it more than any one of the 6 people on this list, but we're pushing a 7th season without a major win. And like I said, prior, his legacy is on the line. It's going to be uphill battle for him. Calvin is like, he's the wild card here. He may not want it the most, but I think he needs it the most. I think of the 20 majors-ish in the next 5 years, I could see this group winning 2 or 3 on the back of Calvin. For the other group, you got Isaac, who is already a proven winner in the modern field. And as he develops his game and these major courses align with his skill set, he's going to get more major wins. I think he's a must pick to win a USDGC in the next 5 years. I think he's got what it takes to do that. You got Niklas, who I think he's on the verge of the big one. He took a huge step this year for himself. I think of the 3 in his group, he's actually the least likely to contribute to the major total, but there's definitely a possibility for him taking one down. And when it comes to AB, I know he struggles with major finishes, but this is the first year that things have clicked for him. And now that he's tasted victory, I don't think a major win is very far off for AB. So of the next 20 majors available, I think they could win 7 or 8 of those majors. And the only reason I'm not saying more is because Gannon the Beast is not in there. And I think Calvin and them are going to take a few themselves. But I think that just Group B is going to be more consistent over the 5 years. I think they have the age advantage, and they're just proven winners in the modern field. I think this question would have been interesting if you would have taken out Macbeth and put in like a Simon up there maybe, or even shifted Anthony Barella because how long he's been in the league in that group and put Gannon in the second group. But it's B every time.
Yeah, I think the question, it really comes down to how much stock you put in kind of the major stigma, because in a reality where you don't really believe in that, because there's a lot of people, a lot of Calvin fans and Ricky fans that don't really believe in that. If you just think it is just kind of like how the dice have been rolled, then you could very easily convince yourself that Ricky and Calvin over the next 5 years could win six majors between the two of them. Like, it's not hard to make that stretch. I mean, there are two players that have been two top five players for the last however many seasons. And then you could just as easily, if you believe in the major stigma, you could just as easily say, well, Ant Lambrella haven't won a major yet. Who's to say they're not just like Rick and Calvin and they never win one in the next 5 years? Like Calvin or Ricky has done it for 7 years. Like, it, so I think that there is different ways to spin that argument. But you know, going, if you just, yes, I think if you just go with the gut feeling, it's always going to be Group B there. I don't know, Brody, Scott, what do you think? What group would each of you pick? Would either of you
pick? What the heck? I didn't get in the finals. You don't get my answer.
Okay, fine. Scott, Group A or B?
Interesting. ChatGTP said that Group A would win.
Yeah, I bet he did, because it's like Paul won 17 majors.
They noted, Group A's experience under pressure being a determining factor in how many majors they would win. Personally, I agree with Gary and Mike. I do not see how that younger generation will be outbeat by Calvin, Ricky, and Paul, as much as I'd like to see it happen.
I think I asked ChatGPT to give me the top 10 disc golfers of all time, and it had Eric McCabe at like 7.
Yeah, can you just help me real quick? Is ChatGPT, is that just a AI that pulls info from websites? Is that all it is?
Yeah.
If you have the free version of ChatGPT, it only pulls information from like 2022 and earlier. So yep. That's also probably a big reason.
And if it sees gaps, it fills in gaps with like AI clouded logic. So it's not always.
Right. Okay. And also there's not a lot of articles out there for disc golf. So there's not like there's people writing hit pieces on certain players and like they has. It's literally
when you ask
just
AI about disc golf, you get things that sound coherent to somebody who doesn't know disc golf, but somebody who does, you're like, that's a little bit off. Like, what did you just say about that disc?
I feel like if you ask stuff about like one of the big four sports, there's so much information out there that it can actually give you a good answer.
No, it's good stuff.
According to ChatGPT, Paul just won USDGC. So like,
there you go. That's where we're at.
The only way Group A is winning this matchup is if Calvin wins one major and Gannon wins 19.
Yeah.
That's the only way that's happening.
I had to look real quick. I think in terms of major drought, there's 24 years of combined major drought in Group A.
That's a lot. Well, yeah, there's a couple players, Calvin in particular, that's really contributing to that drought. Yeah. Anyways, congrats to Mike. Mike is our winner today. Great show, Mike. I really liked your Wimbledon analogy. That was really good. That's good stuff right there. Preserve the game. What is wooded course equal to the grass courts? I actually saw a video the other day of a guy who like made a grass court in his backyard. He like brings people out to play there. Like it's legendary. Anyways, yeah, congrats on the win. Repping Airborne.
Yeah, I'll say two things with my time. First thing is, it wouldn't help me today, but petition to have the finals go back to 0-0. I think that would be electric. Give the chance for someone behind to get the win.
Okay.
And then my other shout out is for myself, PDGA. I'm going to look into the camera while I say this. This is my application to be hired. You guys don't know what you're doing. Get your schedule figured out. Get wooded majors figured out. I will put my resume in the comments and feel free to reach out whenever you want to.
Okay. There you go. I heard they got great benefits. Free PDGA membership. You can be part of the Eagle Club.
What would you guys think? Because Wimbledon's such a big deal because they only play on grass once a year. What do you guys think if that was disc golf? If literally there was Champions Cup was the only time we ever play in the woods.
Well, as Mike was saying it, I could kind of envision this idea.
That would be kind of sick.
Well, I think there, like, let me be clear. If there was assets beyond, like, if there was like real money in disc golf, I think there's a world where you can create a wooded venue that does, like, imagine
a tree wooded course. Yeah, tree houses. We've talked about this.
Well, that is one thing, but imagine a wooded course where you've got 5 feet of woods and then there is like good spectator lanes, yeah, or they are maybe just like there are ways to accomplish it, of course. But I do think in the short term, the sport could get pushed so much further in a different direction because of what we need to accomplish right now that, yeah, it is an interesting one.
I think our sport, with how much the Disc Golf Pro Tour shows drone footage, and they don't actually use it as, they don't use it as a replay. They use it as like the live shot for so many shots. Maybe disc golf's an aerial sport. So maybe spectators right now, instead of standing 5 feet behind players, that's not the best angle.
No,
the best angle is 100 feet in the air. So maybe we need platforms.
Now we're talking
platforms. Ooh. You know, those like weird museums where you're like, you're walking and the grass cracks and you like get scared that you're going to fall through the floor.
Yeah.
Just all glass floors, 100 feet above the ground.
Yeah. But then how is Kevin Jones going to throw his grenades?
That's a good point. It hits the glass platform.
Could you imagine how electric it would be to have professional drone flyers flying drones behind discs through the woods?
I will say this. Picture this. You're up maybe on one of these platforms.
The noise and would be annoying.
They kind of shape it to where it goes with the flight, and you're watching a hyzer travel up like it's within 5 feet of you, yeah, at its peak. And you can reach out and grab it, and then it fades. Like, that's electric. You can read Yuli's phone number on the bottom of that thing.
Glass platforms, man. It's the future of disc golf.
We might have to start thinking about glass
platforms. We just solved it.
That could be the solution. Anyways, if you got any better solutions or any topics, you can scan the QR code here on the screen or click the link in the description. Everybody was lacking on the topic submissions last week. I think I had like one. So get in there, submit some topics. You've only got a few more tries before the end of the season, so make sure to do so. Other than that, we'll see you next week after D-Glo, before the playoffs. See you then.